back to another Cardinals Off Day podcast. This is Ben Godar. I'm one half of your All Ben hosting team, joined by my good friend Ben Humphrey. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. The weather's getting warmer. We've settled into the rhythm of the baseball season, and I'm looking forward to the week and months ahead of warm weather and baseball just about every day.
Absolutely. Same here. As I mentioned to you a moment ago, our local AAA 9 has a noon game tomorrow, and it is Mug Club Day. So that means a free beer as well. So I'm going to try to make that happen, but we'll see. Work may dictate otherwise. But moving forward, we know folks want to talk about the Cardinals, so we are going to do that. We're planning to talk about Whitey Herzog, planning to look at some questions today. But before we do that, Ben, what have you learned?
Not so much learned as had reinforced that hitting the ball in the air is good. And, you know, this really jumped out at me when I was looking at Jordan Walker and Mason Wynn's stats. We all know Jordan Walker hits the ball hard. That's true this year. He's in the 88th percentile with an average exit velocity of 92.5. But despite that, he is in the low 30s for expected batting average, expected slugging, expected weighted on base average. And when I look at Mason Wynn, he hits the ball pretty hard as well. But his average exit velocity is 90.1, a little bit lower, 65th percentile. Nonetheless, his expected batting average of 292 is in the 81st percentile. And the big difference between the two is their batted ball profile. Walker has a 52.8 ground ball percentage in the range of where it was last year when they sent him down to work on lifting the ball more. His line drive percentage is only 5.6%. And then you compare that to Mason Wynn, who has a 36.8 ground ball percentage so far this young season, entering the season finale against the Oakland A's, and a 34.2% line drive percentage. So Mason Wynn, so far this young season, is hitting line drives about as often as he's hitting ground balls. And while he's benefited from some batted ball luck, I would say that, you know, he is nonetheless more deserving of his good numbers than bad because of his ability to hit the ball on the line so far this year. And I think that's a good sign for his 2024 moving forward. Ben, what have you learned so far this season?
Well,
or in the last week?
Yeah, I have learned that Tyler O'Neill is a good baseball player until he gets hurt. And I'm guessing many of our listeners saw the really awful collision that he had the other day, which of course has knocked him out of the Red Sox lineup where he was really mashing. And I know in that first week or two of the season, I saw plenty of Cardinals fans wringing their hands and saying, oh, it's a Rosarena and on all over again. But Ben, I'm not convinced that this Tyler O'Neill season isn't going to be just like every other Cardinals Tyler O'Neill season, because he's always been good when he's been healthy, but he just has not been healthy often. And, you know, sometimes guys do have those like chronic injuries that are, you know, always come back. And O'Neill definitely has had more of the like freak injuries. And so the usual line of reasoning goes, well, that's not, that person's not injury prone. They've just, you know, sort of had some bad luck or whatever. But there are just certain guys that seem to bend the universe to them. And, you know, even the freak injuries just happen with consistency. And that's Tyler O'Neill. So, you know, I'm certainly not wishing him ill health, but I would say so far what he's having in Boston looks to me exactly like a Tyler O'Neill season.
Yeah, that's very fair. And that that collision, whenever you see that like head-on-head contact, it really makes you cringe. And so I am really hoping for the best for Tyler O'Neill. But as we saw with Anthony Rizzo, who had the concussion,
yeah,
you know, if you get a traumatic brain injury, the after effect can linger for an extended period of time and can really derail you when you're trying to hit, you know, major league fastballs and major league breaking.
Yeah, Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Ben, now that we've each shared something we learned, let's dive into our main topic. And this is also not at all a happy topic, though not too unexpected. Whitey Herzog, of course, passed away this week. The White Rat, longtime Cardinals manager, and then just kind of legendary figure throughout the organization. So, Ben, I thought maybe we could just take a minute and share any kind of specific thoughts or memories you have about Whitey Herzog.
I think, you and I are of an age where I think the idea of what baseball is or what baseball can be is, the Whitey Herzog era of St. Louis Cardinals, the running Redbirds, if you will. And so, Vince Coleman, Ozzie Smith, Willie McGee, Tommy Herr, these are the players that, helped make us into folks who love baseball into adulthood and love the St. Louis Cardinals into adulthood. So, it's a sad day whenever an all-time great, a legend passes away. But it hit particularly close to home for me because, he made Ozzie Smith a Cardinal. Ozzie Smith is my favorite player of all time. And probably made me a Cardinals fan because I got to see, Ozzie Smith play on television, and Willie McGee play on television. Vince Coleman set the or set the consecutive stolen base record and steal over 100 bases as a rookie. And granted, that was done following the Cardinals in the newspaper, but it was something exciting to do every morning was look up. How many stolen bases the Cardinals had and how they did the day or the night before. And it was because he came in with an idea of how to be successful in Busch Stadium, and he put together a roster to put that idea to the test, and it worked for several years. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for making St. Louis Cardinals baseball into the regional event every year that it is for us and so many others. And so, he lived a long life by all accounts, a full one. And that, of course, is a positive thing, but it nonetheless makes you sad that he's not going to be there on opening day next year when the folks with red jackets ride around the warning track after the Clydesdales.
Yeah, absolutely. I would echo everything that you said. I actually have read his autobiography, White Rat, A Life in Baseball, which but I would rec you know just as a Cardinals fan, I would recommend it. And it is interesting because he kind of walks you through in a lot of detail those early that early year with the Cardinals. That you mentioned, where he, was hired as manager, but then asked to be moved into the GM role as well, and just went on that, ridiculous like fantasy baseball spree of trades and acquisitions. And I brought them all up, the moves he did in the space of a year there, that of course got them, Daryl Porter and Bruce Sutter and Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee, and on and on and on. And I thought about reading them, but there's just too many, Ben. Like it would take half the podcast with me just reading these trades. But yeah, as you said, he had this point of view, he for this kind of style of team that he thought would be successful in St. Louis. And of course, this is a pre-analytics era, and so it was a little more like follow your gut. And his gut turned out correct, certainly in terms of the results on the field. I think he also just had a great eye for talent. So when you look at these trades and these moves, they definitely got better players than the other guys got, regardless of the style of play. But yeah, so legendary to the organization for all of those reasons. I mean, Whitey Herzog, Ben, that is a Inner Circle Hall of Fame baseball guy name, wouldn't you say?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And I
And
think just as a kid, and this being kind of the first team that I fell in love with, a guy that looks like that with a name like that, just
yes.
really, yeah, just the kind of quintessential manager, at least in my mind.
Oh, absolutely. And you were saying a great baseball name, and then it's if you're casting the character of Whitey Herzog, well, here's the guy out of central casting to have that name, you
Yeah.
know, like
Yes.
and it's just one of those, you know, just wonderful baseball characters that seem to be a little bit fewer and farther between nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, anyway, wanted to just talk a little bit about Whitey Herzog, who unfortunately has passed on. But Ben, with that, should we move into some questions which are a little more about current era Cardinals?
Yeah, let's get to the re or the listener questions.
All right, we have a lot today and a lot of new folks reaching out with questions. So hopefully those are new listeners as well, and we welcome you. Let's see. Newt Bar Supreme asks, should we play Wynn and DFA Crawford?
I'm gonna say yes, but with the caveat that, you know, if you do not have Brandon Crawford, you don't really have a backup shortstop. And so, you know, Lynn's been nursing some back issues here early this season. And so that seems like it might be a little bit of a dangerous move, you know, to execute at this point in time. But I think there very well could come a point in this season where, you know, maybe the St. Louis Cardinals, you know, don't really have room on the roster for Brandon Crawford and maybe need to move on from him as a bench player. I don't know, Ben, what do you think?
Well, I think they can't possibly DFA him right now because they have no one else who can play shortstop. And not even talking about just who's on the major league team, they don't have guys in the high minors that are in any way a credible option to play shortstop at the major leagues. So he's there now. And honestly, I think the only person in the organization who hypothetically could move him out is Tommy Edman when Tommy Edman comes back. If they decide that, with his versatility, he fills that, backup shortstop role enough. So I expect he's going to be here all year, if I'm being perfectly honest, because this is just a thing the Cardinals do. When they sign a capital V veteran like this, Ben, they honor their commitment to him. And I mean, I think we can say that kind of pejoratively, but like honestly, taking a step back, like that's a fairly good thing for a business to do, right? Like,
Right. Yeah,
so.
I totally agree. Like, you know, it's not fantasy baseball. You know, you're talking about Whitey Herzog with the fantasy baseball trades, and I think a lot of times the kind of, oh, get this guy out of here mindset is informed by fantasy baseball, where it's just a name on your computer or your phone or whatever. But this is a guy who is from the western part of the United States who signed with the Cardinals. And as even said, the Cardinals were one of the few teams who have spring training in Florida that he would consider. And, you know, there's also the intangible value of that veteran presence and how he might be helping some of the younger players come along. We know that Ollie Marmol has been very vocal in needing veteran players to kind of fill that leadership void with Pujols and Molina leaving because, you know, Oliver Marmol can't do that. So, you know, there's probably some of that intangible value as well. And I don't want to, you know, give that no accounting when we're talking about whether or not to keep him.
Yep, agreed.
Russ57 on the Cardinals Discord asks, what do you guys think about Marmol's off days policy for regulars in the lineup? On social media, he took a hit from fans for giving Wynn an off day on Sunday. We know La Russa would give regulars days off, primarily so bench players stay sharp and not waste away. Aren't fans being a little hard on Marmol?
I tend to agree with Russ on this. I think, like, and look, I'll be honest, my heart sinks and I grouse when I see getaway day lineups sometimes, as well. There's certainly a point where one could be overusing them. I mean, obviously, you want to play your best players as much as you can play them and keep them fresh. But, Ben, this I kind of chalk this up to, they just know more than we do on these things. And so, when the team says this guy needs a day off, I just tend to think, okay, that guy needs a day off, right? Because, they're there in the clubhouse with these guys, understanding how their bodies work. And of course, then the organization has game plans, over the year just to, for some load management and things like that. And I will say too, some of the people that I saw talking about this, it wasn't it, it was it, it was like, well, we especially need to do this, like, if it could mean winning or losing a series. And Ben, I thought that was nonsense because I don't know if you have noticed this, but all of the games count the same. So if you sweep half of your series and you are swept in half of your series, you will have the same record as if you have an equal number of splits, right? I mean, it's just kind of how it all works out.
Yeah, and I would say to your point that they're with the players in the clubhouse, on Monday, after everyone on social media was, not happy about Wynn being on the bench, they basically talked about how he was dealing with stiffness in his back and he played through it on Friday and Saturday, and they decided he needed the off day on Sunday because he was dealing with this issue, and they just needed to get him a break. And so,
Well, go
I think that's 100% defensible, and not only just defensible, probably a good decision since it's only April.
Well, and I will say too, one thing Tony La Russa always said was, I need to get those Brandon Crawford type guys at bats to keep them fresh because there is going to be a point where I need them. And again, I'm not there. I don't know how we measure that, but that's completely reasonable. And I think you have to trust somebody like Tony La Russa that, he sees better results out of those b back into the bench guys, who, granted, you're not going to need often, but there's times you're really glad you have them. So yeah, I think that's a very defensible reason for getaway day lineups as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, the load management as well. It's a long season. I was actually, and we talked about this a little bit in leading into the season, a little bit concerned that they might be locking in too many players as everyday players entering this year, and meaning that they wouldn't be getting as many days off. And so I'm actually okay, especially if some, I'm not a big you have to play hurt guy. Like, I'm more like if you need a day or two or three, take them and, get yourself rejuvenated because we've got several months ahead of baseball and we need you to be performing at a high level in order to be competitive. And so, with the Wynn situation over the weekend, I think that falls firmly within that category where, we need to get him more days off so he's not making his back injury worse or causing another problem because he's compensating for a stiff or a, an issue in his back. And so I think it's generally advisable to get guys days off because I think it makes them stay fresher over the course of the full season and healthier over the course of the full season. And it, as you said, in the question states, it keeps some of those bench guys sharper so that they can come in and contribute if need be when a regular goes down to injury.
Absolutely. All right, we have several hitting related questions. Ben, have you looked at this list? We have a ton of questions today, so.
Yeah, there are a lot. I probably need to talk less in the answers
Well,
since
probably
we
maybe we both can aim to try and buzz through all do that to buzz through all these. But our first hitting related question comes from the Schmitzer on Blue Sky. And again, we are on Blue Sky. Please follow and interact with us. Bring everyone from Cardinals Twitter over to Cardinals Blue Sky so I don't have to log into X. But the Schmitzer asks, where do you think the best spot in the batting order is for Newt Barr, both in the short and long term?
Right now, with the way the roster is constructed, I think batting him a little bit down in the order to me makes sense. But I think that long term you could see him, maybe move in to more of a meat of the order position. I think like right now they seem to want to go Donovan, Goldschmidt, and then like a lefty bat like Gorman, and then Arenado. Maybe you could see him batting in the fifth spot, but with the way Contreras is hitting, like I don't know about that, but I think, as we sit here today, having him behind kind of those bigger power bats in the middle of the order, like La Russa used to do with like Edgar Renteria, or a Reggie Sanders type. Like I think that's a good place for Lars Nootbaar right now. But who knows with Gorman and Goldschmidt, Gorman has peaks and valleys. Goldschmidt is off to a slow start. They may need to revisit this whole configuration. And maybe if Nootbaar continues to hit with power, maybe he finds himself in the middle or top part of that order. That wouldn't surprise me by the end of the year. But right now, I like him down a little bit lower in the pretty well because he can help drive in those guys.
I don't think too much about batting order, and when I do, I think it's, the fairly straightforward. Put your better hitters as high up as possible, and it's best to define that, by on base percentage usually. And the other thing is, going right, left, right does serve you some strategic advantage, particularly later on in the game, and especially I think now with the three batter minimum. I think he makes sense, anywhere at the top of the lineup, and if they're committed to Brendan Donovan at leadoff, and with his ability to get on base, I think that's completely reasonable. Then Goldie, you hope, gets going at two, and then number three, you're back to another lefty. I honestly, it's Nootbaar or Gorman, kind of a toss up. You could certainly put Nootbaar there, or you could drop him down a little farther. So, but yeah, get him near the top of the lineup because he's probably our best hitter.
Yeah, right now, I mean, it's rare, Ben, when a guy is injured and misses, a chunk of spring training and then the beginning of the season, they have a short rehab assignment and then just come to the majors guns a blazing, and like Nootbaar has wasted no time. I mean, he's just red hot and it's been pretty impressive to see. Scotty asks, why does our offense fold like a house of cards every time the going gets tough? Maybe it wasn't leadership we needed, but players with a winning mentality.
Well, I am not I'm not a fan of the winning mentality narrative, Ben, because I feel like players who win are called, winning players, and I can't quite buy into that, which is not to say that competitiveness doesn't exist and some of these other intangible things don't exist, but I think players on good teams tend to win and players on bad teams tend not to win, regardless of how the player themselves performs. So I don't necessarily think that's an issue. And honestly, the whole leadership thing, it just so grosses me out how the team put that into the conversation this year. Because, kind of same thing. Leadership exists, right? It's can be a valuable thing to have in a workplace, but we just have no way to gauge any of that. So I would rather not think about that at all. I mean, at this point, I'd say, our offense just is not performing, and I don't have great faith that they have a major league coaching staff that can help some of these, obviously very good hitters who are not hitting at the moment. And sometimes, the player needs to work through that, but I do believe, there are coaches who can help players more quickly work through those things, and it just, doesn't always seem like we have those guys.
Well, and Jordan Walker is a good example, Ben, where
Yes.
last year he was hitting the ball on the ground too much. They had to send him to AAA to get better. And then he came back up to the majors and was better. Now he spent, the whole minor, or excuse me, the whole spring training camp, he's a starter. And then the start of the year, he's doing the exact same thing he was doing at the end of last year. And it does kind of make you wonder, like, who's talking to him and who's he listening to? Just as an example.
Yeah.
And I would say that I would also add, we just had tax day a few days ago, so it's still very early. And when you look at this lineup, you have to ask yourself, do you think that Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt are going to be this bad all year? And Arenado has already started to heat up. Goldschmidt hasn't, but I think it's a safe bet he's not going to end the season with the batting line he has now. Ivan Herrera and Contreras have hit very well. Brendan Donovan has hit very well. Lars Nootbaar has hit very well. I don't think Victor Scott, too, is not a winning player. I think he's a player with 310 plate appearances above A ball at the start of the year, who shouldn't be in the majors because he's not ready as a batter. And that's not on him. It's not that he's not a winning player. It's because the organization cleared the deck in the outfield and did not fully understand, or there were some complications with Tommy Edman's mystery injury, surgery, and rehabilitation. And that thrust him into the role he is after Dylan Carlson got hurt in a freak outfield collision. And so, some of these things are, the team had a weird falling of the dominoes, and here they are in Victor Scott's case. And so they are basically, when Scott starts, they're playing a bat down in the lineup. And so that can be tough to overcome as well. And so I think once Nolan Gorman gets on a hot streak at the same time as, I don't know, Contreras or Donovan, this lineup's going to look a lot more formidable. And I think we'll feel a little bit better about the team. And I think it's early. It's too early to panic. And they just need a little bit more time to get going offensively. And I think they.
Okay. Well, Rich G on the Cardinals Discord asks, the offense is obviously holding this team back. If you were the manager slash front office, not Ollie or Mo, but you were running the team, what would you do to jumpstart the offense? Benching, changing the lineup, demotion, call up. Ben, would you do anything at this point?
I would be hesitant to bench anyone. I think you just have to play matchups the way you would regardless. But maybe you try to get a guy a day off who's struggling if you're facing, a particularly tough pitcher, like, say Goldschmidt against a tough righty or something like that. Like, Goldschmidt has looked very bad on breaking stuff and sliders early on. If you're facing a starter with a really tough slider, like, I'd probably try to maybe get him a day off, and let him clear his head. But benching to me is something more than just a game. So right now, I think you've got to let Jordan Walker have some leash to turn things around. Paul Goldschmidt has certainly earned it. And once you get past those two, I mean, Victor Scott needs to go down, but who does he go down and who is he replaced with?
Yeah. Well, and
Like,
that's the thing, Ben, is I think that, and it's not even in the minor leagues. It's like who are these, bench guys, right? As you mentioned, I think they are doing a fairly good job of rotating certain guys and keeping some guys fresh. But of the guys who are infrequently starters, Brandon Crawford, right? Michael Ciani, like who is it that everybody, that we think could come in and do anything? So I like your idea of maybe being more aggressive about giving guys a day off against a tough pitcher when they're struggling. I think that's actually a good suggestion. But yeah, outside of that, I think it's too early to do any of this. And even if it wasn't too early, I don't think there's, better options for them to go to.
Yeah, it's we folks often refer to it as the backup quarterback mentality. But like when I look at the bench, I'm like, well, who's the backup quarterback that you want to put in here? Like there's not really any reinforcements. And they have purposely structured this roster so there aren't any. Now Dylan Carlson was that for the outfield before he got hurt. Well, before Edmund had his whole debacle, and Carlson had that bad collision, like that just decimated their depth just across the board. And so it really limits the front office and Marmol's ability to make changes. And I'm not saying that it's anyone's fault. It's just, it has happened and here they are. Now, should they maybe have signed a major league outfielder instead of or in addition to Brandon Crawford? Maybe. But it's, well, I guess Tommy Pham's still out there, but he's not going to come in and play center field, So they're in a position where they need the guys who they have given starting jobs to hit like they're capable of hitting. And until that happens, it's going to be frustrating to watch.
All right. Steve at Tree Fixer asks, how much longer can the Cards sustain putting Walker and Scott in the lineup day in and day out?
I think until Tommy Edman or Dylan Carlson comes back from the injured list, which is probably going to be several weeks or a month at this point in time. I mean, Tommy Edman was just cleared to swing a bat and hit off a tee, and Carlson has not resumed baseball activities the last I saw. So, I mean, those guys are still a ways off. I mean, with Walker, he is hitting the ball hard. It's just on the ground. That's what he did to start last year. The ground balls happened to find more holes, and he started the year with a big hit streak. This year, if he's able to start lifting the ball, those hard hit balls are going to be doubles and homers instead of ground outs. And I think he'll be a valuable bat in the lineup. Scott 100% needs to go down. We've talked about this for a while now. But it's, as we just said, who do you demote him for? And I don't know the answer to that question.
I agree with you on that one.
Ryan DeWerf, moving to the roster, Ryan DeWerf asks, do the Cardinals have any position players in their prime? It seems we either have guys on the downside, Arenado, Goldie, or promising young players who have yet to reach their full powers, Wynn, Walker, Gorman, etc. Perhaps Contreras, Nootbaar? What do you think, Ben?
Well, I think we don't know what we got till it's gone, Ben. And so I see where the question's coming from, and I would agree with those categories here. And yeah, I would say if I had to pick people who seemed like maybe most in their prime, I think maybe Contreras and Nootbaar kind of make sense. But it's hard to say. And I think maybe we see a prime more in hindsight when we look back on a career. Than necessarily knowing we're in it when we're there. So yeah, I think it's just the more general thing that yeah, the older players like Arenado and Goldie are in some degree of decline, and the younger players he mentions, we hope they're still in ascendancy. But of course, there always comes a point where it's like, oh, I guess that's as good as they're going to get, and we never know we're there until we're there.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I agree with his categories. I think Wilson Contreras pretty clearly is still in his prime. And unfortunately, it looks like Goldschmidt and Arenado are in some part of their decline phase. And it looks like those other guys are ascending. Although, I think some of them may be ready to step into their prime years. Like Gorman, it feels like he could be, this year could be that year for him. But I tend to agree with his categorizations. And With Newt Barr, just to me, it's a question of health. It's tough to really assess him until he's out there for 145, 150 games as a starter. But we'll see. I would add, I think Brendan Donovan is probably entering the prime of his career, given his age, what he did last year before he got hurt, and what he has done very early this year. I think he could be a guy who is in, who has entered or is entering the prime of his career. So I would add him to that list.
Yeah, makes sense. All right. Lisi Henson asks, why are they so in love with Palante? That's the right way to pronounce it, Ben, correct?
Yes.
And I was saying Payante last year, and we got people complaining. Why are they
Yes.
so in love with Palante? He is not effective. It seems like some of their experiments are very limited, while others go on forever. Ben, I know you're not a big Palante fan, so I think this one's been teed up for you.
I have no idea. I don't get it. It's ground ball guys who have like a low batting average on balls in play season, are a dime a dozen, and the number of them who parlay that into multi-year successful season as relievers, I can't think of many, if any. And so I don't understand it. I know he, to his credit, he recognized that he's not all that great, and he went and worked on improving his repertoire over the offseason, but it sure doesn't look to have been very effective, at least early in the year. I
Yeah.
guess I would say it's still early, so maybe their faith in him will be justified, but like our questioner, I'm kind of over Palante, and I don't really understand why they would carry like him and Zach Thompson. They just both seem so mediocre. Like you could have one or the other, and it wouldn't, you don't need them both. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you see any
Well,
value?
I think I'm a little more forgiving to an extent of Palante. I wouldn't say t now when I look at I know the question refers to them being in love with him, and they certainly use him a lot. But honestly, I see them putting him in a lot of tough situations, and I feel like they've kind of done that throughout his career. I mean, he really sort of broke in as an emergency starter there for a while. And then that, he ends up having to kind of be the long man, multi-inning guy oftentimes. So I think they've kind of consistently put him in just sort of tough situations. And that I think could be reflected in some of his results because I think, they're not necessarily giving him the best opportunity to succeed all the time. And like you, I like the off-season stuff, just seeing the aggressiveness that he was in there working to improve. And, he's still a young guy. So I'm willing to, believe that there could be some improvement there. That said, we're not seeing it. So, this very well may be all that there is. And if that's the case, yeah, I hope they move on to a better option soon.
Yamez Duckin on the Cardinals Discord asks, "Hello, two Bens, one pod. While the Cardinals are currently fine, in all honesty, do you think that Wilson Contreras should be considered a trade chip if the season gets worse? Before his hand got bopped, we saw some improvement in his receiving skills, and his blocking looked a bit better too. Instead of getting phased out of catcher in a year or two, he seems like someone who can hang in a timeshare to the end of his contract. I feel like he has more value now than when he came into the organization, even with his Flaherty, Michaelis, Marmol, Mosellock issue last season. Thoughts?"
Well, Ben, this question makes me realize I haven't really thought ahead to the what if scenario of if it's another terrible season like last season, what would they do at the trade deadline? So I haven't put a lot of thought into that. That said, the Cardinals being the Cardinals, I expect that if they even if they get into that situation, they'll act in pretty much the same way they did last year. I think trading Contreras would be something close to a teardown and a rebuild, and that's not something that the Cardinals do. So I don't think it's likely. That said, if they're out of it and looking to be opportunistic, and they had a good offer for him, and in particular, they're getting the kind of play at catcher that they've been getting these past couple weeks, I don't think they. I think then he could be a reasonable trade chip. What do you think?
I would definitely explore him as a trade chip. And it's really a question of how much damage they did to other organizations' perception of him last year with their just, I mean,
Well, Ben,
just
nobody else wanted to take him as a catcher anyway, so I don't know that
well,
he changed it.
yeah, I mean, even assuming that, like, it could be that no one views him as a catcher anymore. And although he has looked much better this year, so they would probably have that data. They probably have their scouting to that effect. So it's possible that that his reputation, that he will have rejuvenated his own reputation with the work he did in the season with his brother. And if that's the case, I think that they do need to explore trading him. Although that being said, last year he was the only one who seemed to be going out there, playing really hard-nosed baseball until the end of that season. Quite frankly, Ben, like watching those games, it seemed like just about everyone else mailed it in for the last one third of that season or so, and Contreras was out there just going hard every day.
Well, Ben, when you start the
And
season off announcing publicly that you would kill someone for your team, I think you've set an expectation that it is now up to you to meet.
so what I'm saying is, if they trade him away, if things go south this year, who's going to be worth watching on this team?
Yeah, right. Yeah, don't do it
Like,
just for that for us, folks.
but no, I think they have to explore it, but they probably have to explore it on just about everyone, because hopefully after they have fired Marmol, because if things get that bad, he needs to go, and they really need to look at the entire roster construction in terms of long-term contracts and see who they can shed, because it's just not working. So that would be how I would approach it. I think you have to listen on everyone and be willing to make a change in that clubhouse, because if it's 2 years in a row of that, they really need to change the dynamic.
Yep.
Looking here from friend of the pod, Devon, he asked, should we get rid of all the pitching staff that remain from the 2019 season?
Well, Ben, when I saw this in the queue, I did open up the baseball reference page because I thought, I'm not sure I can remember who all would have been here then. And as I'm looking at this, Ben, the only names that I see on the pitching staff that still remain are Miles Michaelis, Ryan Helsley, and Giovanni Gallegos. So Ryan Helsley, of course, they should keep. Ryan Helsley's, filthy and healthy, so 100% they should keep him. Miles Michaelis, I think we just have to live with the Miles Michaelis experience is the Miles Michaelis experience. And I think when they make him an opening day starter and they treat him like some kind of, ace-like figure, that hypes him up well more than he's worth. But he's good enough to be a number five starter, I mean, so like he, as much as I don't enjoy watching him pitch most of the time, like I think he still kind of is what he is, and they don't have better options, right? There's other organizations that have better options, but we don't. And then that kind of leaves Gallegos, and I don't know. Yeah, Gallegos has not looked good this year, and sometimes when relievers look cooked, they're cooked. So But he's had a pretty long track record of success for a reliever as relievers go. So and of course it's very early in the season too, so they should definitely stay with him. But he is, looking like, yeah, he's not looking like himself, Ben.
Yeah, I am just so over Miles Mikolas, just the whole shtick, and then, just having really middling, fringy stuff.
Yeah.
And the Cardinals starting him on opening day. I know that's not his choice, but it makes me dislike him even more.
Well, but you make a good point about just his kind of like peacocking and silliness, and you and I are actually all for like these guys embracing their role as entertainers, but he's taken on a particular kind of character this with this kind of dopey braggadocio that then he can't back up at all, that is neither entertaining nor fun.
Yes, it's just there's and that is the risk you run when you do this kind of it's a big hat, it's funny. Will Leach on the Seen Red podcast, referred to him as like Turd Ferguson from Celebrity Jeopardy
Which is
in
such a
reference.
fantastic nickname for him.
The Norm Macdonald Burt Reynolds character. So if, and it's just so dead on. And I really wish they would get rid of him, like really bad. But he doesn't do anything well that any other team values. They might be able to get the Rockies to take him because they're the only organization that is more in the dark about what makes pitchers good than the St. Louis Cardinals. So
Well,
my great
he is
hope is
name.
like the Rockies take him.
Yeah, so he's name brand Dakota Hudson is what we're saying.
Yes, he's the Dr. Pepper to Dakota Hudson's Dr. Thunder.
Yes. All right.
And they should be reunited on the Colorado Rockies.
All right. We've got two kind of small categories of questions left to get here. We're going to power through and see if we can get through all of these. These next couple relate to the front office. Ben without hats says, how long does attendance need, or how low does attendance need to be for the front office to get the message that fans are unhappy with a sub 500 team?
Well, I saw where the Tourist Bureau put out a press release in the Riverfront Times had this that they estimated the value that the Cardinals generated, the economic value this year would be, I think, like $400,000 less than it was last year because they're anticipating lower attendance. So they're all that is already baked in. So I think that they recognize that. And I think some of the boo birds at opening day probably conveyed that. But they're gonna feel it because ownership is gonna feel it. And ownership's gonna make it known like this is not okay. But I don't know that you're focusing on the right group because the front office has a budget and they went out and did the what they thought was the best they could do with the budget they had. And it's really ownership. And until ownership wants things to change in a major way, they're not going to. And everything from the organization since the end of last season has seemed to be calculated to make us believe that they think this is a very serious problem, but then their actions don't really convey that they think it's that serious of a problem.
Yeah.
And so, and that was punctuated by extending Oliver Marmol. Like, so from the free agent signings to extending Oliver Marmol, it seems like they don't really have the sense of urgency that you would expect them to have through their worst season in 30 years, and only ownership can instill that sense of urgency. The front office really isn't going to do that. So I think it's on Bill DeWitt Jr. and his fellow owners to instill that kind of change. What do you think, Ben?
Oh, no, 100%. Low attendance means less money. And who does that impact? Ownership. So it's any change that's going to happen as a result of that will only be because it's low enough to motivate ownership. And I know the question does ask how low, and I don't think we know, but we do know Bill DeWitt likes to make money. So I think it's he it's definitely something that he feels. And as you said, whenever that happens, then from the owner's office, that's where we would see a change at manager, even a change at GM, though I think that's much less likely or unlikely. That'll be the process that'll go through. And honestly, we have to keep our fingers crossed as fans that Bill DeWitt and the DeWitt family still care about, that kind of winning and success and attendance as much as they have, because not all major league owners do, as clearly evidenced by this series that we just played against Oakland. And Ben, I mean, I haven't watched a game in Oakland for a while. It was shocking to me the seats behind home plate. I think I said online that it looked like the bleachers at a rodeo. I mean that, I mean, not breaking news, but that place is a dump. But like seeing it, like watching it for a 3-game series did sort of, bring me a little of that, like, oh, like maybe my hometown's not so bad.
Yeah, it is one of those things where it's, it kind of drives home the point that there's no such thing as like a good baseball owner. Maybe in San Diego, well, until the last offseason, Seidler seemed like a pretty good guy who is committed to doing what it took to win. But like, you look at the Cardinals, they're a last place team. The A's are a last place team, but there are degrees to last place teams, as you just said, and it could be a lot worse. But that doesn't mean that you should take your hard-earned money and go spend it at Busch Stadium. Like that's not a good selling point. Hey, it could be worse. You could be in Oakland. Like, sorry, that's not going to get it done. So, how low it gets. I mean, I think last year, the second half of last year, Busch Stadium was like a tomb. And if it's that again for the second half this year, I think we could see some bigger changes. Moving on, Trenton asks, do you guys think they'll make any moves at the All-Star deadline? I think they mean the trade deadline. What are some of the outcomes that you think will make the front office respond? Thanks, y'all.
We kind of touched on this a little bit earlier. I'll be honest, this is kind of a question mark for me, Ben, because last season they and then even with this off season, essentially, well, basically they last year they recognized we have no pitching in our organization at all. So they kind of sold the pieces that were expiring for very middling pitching prospects, but at least to add some more pitching prospects into the system. And then in the off season, they acquired starting pitching to kind of like hopefully paper over a couple seasons until their organization has produced some more pitching. So that they can't fix that at the off or at the trade deadline, right? So like, I don't know exactly. I'll be honest. I don't know what they would do in that situation. They are so loath to do anything like a rebuild. But 2 straight seasons of, should it go that route of, losing baseball, that's pretty much unprecedented. It is unprecedented, really, in the DeWitt era. So I don't know what they would do.
Yeah, and also though, like the NL Central is clustered pretty tightly together. And so the difference between even a wild card berth or last or second to last place, may not be that big. And so the trade deadline may present an opportunity to make a move that really moves the needle in terms of their postseason chance. And I don't know that they've really had that in recent years, where it the ability to add talent would make enough of a difference in the odds of making the postseason to justify the expenditure in the eyes of ownership in the front office. But coming off of last season, you know, if they're in third or fourth place, but they're like four games out at the trade deadline, you know, do they do something that's a little bit splashier to try to move the needle and not only show people, hey, we're trying to win, but, you know, to really go for it and try to get that playoff chance? And I don't know, like the last, I mean, what would it be? It's really like the last 7 years. There's no reason to believe they would do that, but maybe last year, and if attendance is down this year, it might cause them to reassess their, you know, let them eat cake mentality. I don't know. We'll see.
All right, two final questions here out of the grab bag. Tyler Oman asks, do you think the Cardinals' playoff odds will be better on April 15th or May 15th?
I think they will be better on May 15th. Because I think some of the teams that have had really good starts will probably fall back to earth a little bit. And I think the Cardinals' schedule gets a little bit easier as well. And so I think they'll be a little bit better in a month than they were on the 15th.
Yeah, agreed. I still think this is probably like an 83 win team, 84 win team, and they're playing at a pace somewhat below that now. So I'm gonna keep betting that, if that's a accurate prediction, they'll be a little bit better in May.
All right, Buck Webb asks, in honor of the Oakland series, which Cardinals trade made you most excited when it happened? The Cards stealing McGwire from the A's would top my list, while there are others that panned out better, Edmonds, Walker. None made me more thrilled when it happened than this one. What do you think, Ben? What's your Cardinals trade that made you most excited when it happened?
Yeah, it's a little hard to say, and partly it's because I've had kind of different relationships with the team, and maybe been invested in different things at different times. So, I mean, McGwire might honestly be my answer as well, because just what a like magnetic like face of the game player, and then suddenly that person's going to be on your team, and also, let's be honest, and all credit to Whitey Herzog and Whitey Ball, which we talked about at the top of the show. But through the 80s and 90s, we Cardinals fans did not get to see a lot of what they call home runs. So it was very exciting when they got this guy who that's all he did was hit home runs. So I would put that one up there. The other one that comes to mind for me is Matt Holliday. And it's, they were just kind of at a point there, right, where we're like post sort of like Rolen and Edmonds as Pujols' Scottie Pippen, right? And they clearly had a need to add another significant offensive piece. And Matt Holliday was just such a perfect fit for that. And he panned out, it played out that way. But you even knew that going in, like that he was already that player. So that's one that kind of stands out to me, Ben. Are there others for you?
For me, it is without a doubt Scott Rolen.
Yeah, the Roland's a good one too. Yeah.
And my fun story about that is that summer I studied in London, and then I met my dad in Paris. And I met my dad in Paris right before the major league trade deadline. And to go from a poor college student traveling on a college student budget to traveling with my dad was to take a step up. No longer staying in a hostel, we were staying in a hotel with a concierge, the Hotel du Louvre. And I went to the concierge and I wrote Scott Rolen's name down on a piece of paper Philadelphia Phillies and St. Louis Cardinals. And I was like, if you, because there really wasn't any internet at this point in time, the way there is now. And I said, if there's news about this, can you keep the paper for me and let me know? And my dad and I walked into the lobby after going to, actually, we went to the Louvre, and the concierge comes running up all happy with a USA Today, and there it was, Scott Rolen traded to the St. Louis Cardinals. And I have just always loved Scott Rolen, the way he played, and like them getting him like at that point in time, after some of the postseason challenges the years before, it just felt like, all right, like we are a World Series contender now.
Yeah, well, that's
And
a. Oh, go ahead.
that was just, it was just like, and he's so fun to watch every day because he just does everything, and like I was just very excited for that trade.
Well, and that's a tough memory to be. That's a pretty awesome way to do that. I think my only comparable newspaper related memory is I was in Hawaii when they signed Colton Wong to his extension. And it was like literally front page, like top above the fold front page news. And so I thought, like, this is the only place in the world where this is the above the fold front page story today. But I'm kind of glad I happened to be here to see this.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. The ESPN affiliate in Hawaii, after I wrote the post going after Matheny when they demoted Wong, would call me. Like they started calling me for hits to talk about the Cardinals and Colton Wong because of like, ah, this guy's with us. He's with our native son. Like, and
Oh
it's
man.
just a real fun dynamic when you get to experience that.
Yeah. Oh, love you and miss you, Colton Wong, wherever you are. that's the end of the questions. Thank you everybody again for a great set of questions, especially early in the season. It's nice to have some things to hit on when there may not be a lot. For us to that stands out to us. Ben, let's wrap this thing up. What are you going to be watching for?
It's going to be what I touched on earlier on what I've learned. It's going to be Jordan Walker hitting the ball on a line and Mason Wynn hitting a ball, because that's going to be the secret to their success. And if they're able to do that, this lineup's going to be looking a lot deeper in the weeks ahead. So that's what I'm going to be looking for.
I am going to be watching for any reports and updates on Tommy Edman's health because Tommy Edman is the key to this entire season. It has become just absolutely clear because he's not only the starting center fielder, he's the only actual option they have in center field. It's clear at this point. So until he comes back, I don't know what they're going to do. It seems like they're going to muddle through with a, Victor Scott, Michael Siani platoon from hell. So that's the center field situation. And we already touched on earlier the fact that, assuming Brandon Crawford continues to be a non-entity, well, he's going to be on the roster until Edman's back as well, because there's nobody else that can be the backup shortstop. So, his health situation has been somewhat mysterious. And there's clearly just been a lot of setbacks, and they're just having a hard time getting their hands around it. And so I'm going to be watching that because, if it becomes a reality that he's just not going to be able to perform this season, they are going to have to go out and make some kind of a move. I mean, they just are. That's too much of a hole there for the, and they have nothing to fill it with. So I'm going to be hoping for good news on the Tommy Edman injury front.
I understand where you're coming from. I think we're gonna start seeing Lars Nootbaar in center field, maybe even before our next episode, because I don't think they can keep running Victor Scott out there because he's struggling so much at the plate, both because it hurts the team trying to score runs, but also because I think we're kind of getting into the area where it could be hurting his development. And there's just not enough positives that are coming out of it to justify the experiment much longer, in my opinion. So
Yeah.
I'm real interested to see what the stopgap has been until Edmund gets back.
Yeah, well, and that's I think that's the only stopgap is Nubar, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him get some play in center, but I really think they're committed to him not being the center fielder. So, yeah, if he has to cover, a week or two, I think they would probably live with that, but anything longer than that, I think they're going to have to look for something else.
Yeah,
Ben.
it's just
Oh, go ahead.
it's a tough situation. I don't envy them.
No. Ben, do you have an off day recommendation?
My off day recommendation is going to be the David LaRilla Sunday Notes column on Fangraphs. Sometimes it has some Cardinals tidbits in there. Sometimes it doesn't. I just think it's really good, and I enjoy it throughout this year, but I especially enjoy it during the season. So I recommend folks check that out on Sundays on Fangraph.
All right. Well, I do have an off day recommendation this week, Ben, and it's twofold. I'm going to say the first part of it is just as we continue to live in this ongoing enshittified hellscape of Internet 3.0 or whatever it is, I find it continually more difficult to find material I want to read, or rather, when I do find the material that I want to read, not to be bombarded with ads and garbage and stuff. So I have been subscribing to more Substacks and kind of supporting journalists through outlets like that directly. And so I encourage folks to do that. It feels like one of the last ways that you can kind of curate what you're seeing and also directly support creators that you like. So I think that's good in general. I'm making an effort to do that, but specifically, I wanted to highlight Sam Miller's Pebble Hunting, which I know we've mentioned before, but it really, Sam Miller, I think what he's doing there is just probably like the finest baseball writing right now. I know like many of us read Roger Angel's great work across his long career, and Sam Miller is really kind of moving into that sphere. And in particular, one of his, I think it actually was his most recent post, was this piece called Best Pitch. And it focused on a pitcher named Blair Henley's major league debut. And he takes it pitch by pitch as this guy is struggling to find the zone. And he started his career off with something like seven straight balls. And so just he takes you through it, and he does that thing where he's actually slowing down time and taking you through these little kind of like micro moments in it. And it's just such a kind of moving and human take on that. And then he also weaves in just kind of his own experience with having panic disorder and kind of kind of ties that into it as well. It's a lovely lovely short piece of writing. So I would certainly recommend Sam Miller's Pebble Hunting as you go about subscribing to and curating your media consumption.
And I will second that recommendation. Stan Miller is really wonderful, and Pebble Hunting is quite enjoyable. I encourage our listeners to check it out.
All right, Ben, we did it. We did another episode. Anything else for folks before we wrap it up?
No, enjoy the weather that's getting warmer, and get out to a ball game as soon as you can.
Absolutely. And we will be back with you again on the next Cardinals off day.
Go Cards!